What did you make of where the Mets ranked as far as attendance last year?
Yeah, I didn't like it. Okay, that really bothered me. 18th in attendance when we're right in the middle of a pennant race. I've said this before. The series against the Nationals right before the final Philly series, I think there were 18,000 fans in the stadium during a great pennant race. And so I'm really hopeful this year. I mean, I'm told that usually attendance lags performance. And so I'm really looking forward to this year being a year when the fans come out. I think the fans are having a great time. I mean, when I look out on the stadium, I think it's a great game presentation. We have a great team, I think. I'm really excited by, I think it's going to be a fun place to be this year.
I took that as him telling Met fans, hey guys, I did my part. Now it's time to do your part.
That gives me so much anxiety for the Met fan out there. Because the next question is, how much is it for the average fan to be doing their part? How many of us can't afford season tickets?
I get it.
How many games do I have to go to that every other Met fan is going to be like me and we all do our part?
I'm not sitting here and saying, boy, you better go to a game if you want the Mets to spend. But I think Steve Cohen is having an honest conversation with all of us. Okay, this isn't like the Yankees. This isn't like the Dodgers where they make such a fortune and he's spending a lot of the revenue they make. Steve Cohen went into his own pocket, spent money, and he's reminding Met fans, hey guys, you better show up.
Can we wait till, I don't know, mid-May when we have a month's full of attendance, some of which may not be great in bad weather, before Steve Cohen maybe says he's a little disappointed in attendance? Can you give the fans, off of all the goodwill that was last year and the goodwill that was this offseason, finished off by re-signing Pete Alonso, can you give your fan base a chance to prove themselves before we basically veiled threaten them that I'm not going to spend money?
All right, we're back, and you heard the comments from Steve Cohen. You heard some reaction from a super fan, Evan Roberts, there on WFAN. And early season, you don't get many fired up fan base commentary this early in spring. But in a way, I think a lot of fans felt Cohen was calling them out. And I don't know if he was calling them out, like Evan Roberts said, as you heard in the clip, or he was just commenting on, as an owner of a business, being disappointed about the patronage of what he felt was a good product. And I'm sure part of the goal of anybody who's involved, that's the marketing department, ticket sales, all the components of the Mets that are responsible for helping, you know, promotions and whatnot, bringing fans in, I'm sure they have been put on notice by Cohen to figure out and do things better. But a long time ago, I had a meeting with the Mets when they used to have the bloggers in. And I'm not going to talk about who was in these meetings and the principals, because there are those in the audience I know that listen that were there too. But I remember the big thing that they slapped down a can of Pepsi or Coke on the table and say, look, when you open up this can of Pepsi or Coke, you expect a certain quality. Anytime you know, I'm just using popular brand names, McDonald's, whatever. When you go to these popular brand name joints, or maybe even your local deli or a local restaurant that's not brand named across the globe, like McDonald's or Coke or Pepsi, you expect a certain quality and maybe the experience to be the exact same thing. When you go to a baseball game, the person that was having this conversation that was in the Mets front office was truly right. When you go to a baseball game, you don't know what to expect. You know, you could show up and it could rain. You could show up and it could be bitterly cold. You could show up and the starting pitcher gets knocked out in the first inning. The team plays like garbage. Back in the day, a big controversy back in the late 90s, turn of the century, fans would get angry when Bobby Valentine would rest Mike Piazza on a Sunday, say, hey, the only chance I have to go to a game is on a Sunday. My son or daughter really loves Piazza. How dare Bobby rest Piazza on a Sunday? Well, it's the day game after a night game. You can't manage a team and the rest schedule thinking that Johnny or Jane coming on Sunday needs to see Mike Piazza. I mean, I remember this was a debate all the time. especially because Mike was a catcher, and catchers are going to typically get day game after a night game, and Sundays sometimes was the day. Even back when Gary Carter was the catcher back in the day, I'm sure if I could look it up, Johnny Bench back in the day of the Big Red Machine was the same way. Sunday, day game after night game, that's typically when you're going to give them the rest. So you don't know what you're going to get when you walk into a ballpark. It could be a great experience and the best event of your life. It could be the most miserable experience. I've been to both. I've been to exhilarating games at Shea Stadium or Citi Field. I've been to games where I couldn't wait to get out of there, or games where I sat there going, why am I doing this to myself? Or games that was bitterly cold, or games that, hey, things got out of control in the sixth or seventh inning and I tapped out, you know, because I had better things to do. And in a world back 25 years ago with less distractions, with less options, without social media, without the internet to give you a window into just about any kind of entertainment possible, I think it was less likely that a fan base would select watching the game in another manner versus going there. And I think that's a part of it. So I think it really falls into three different parts. I think it falls into, you know, you have this product that you don't know what the outcome is going to be. And there's a lot of supply and a lot of demand. There's 162 games in 180 days. So if you miss one, there's going to be plenty more. And even from a home game perspective, you got 81 shots of this. It's not eight NFL games on a Sunday. It's not 41 NBA home games. I mean, even there's a lot of supply there too. So keep that in mind. But you have a few components of this whole attendance thing. You have the media component, which the Mets have a media that has created, and they've helped an agenda-driven coverage of the team. And we talked about that. It was some dialogue on social media with that. You have the fact that the team has performed a certain way in the field, and the investment in the team over a period of time has not been there. Maybe that's tied to the media narrative, but that's a self-inflicted wound. And then you have the third piece is a changing demographic, younger people looking at things differently, and different ways to consume sports. And that's where I think that the big part of this is, because you could solve a lot of number one with number two, but number three is here to stay. So let me start here. First things first, the whole last year when Stearns took over, after the Mets made the Scherzer trade and tore the team down in 2023, was a huge black cloud that was self-created, and it probably was the right thing, because right now the Mets have unwound themselves. They got a few prospects. We'll see what those prospects turn into or what they can be used to get the Mets in a situation where maybe they get that missing piece to win a pennant or division or make a deep run into the postseason. And as soon as Scherzer talked about the Mets taking a step back, the media latched onto that. And the media took speculative feelings on who Stearns is or what Stearns was looking to do from those who are outside the organization to paint a narrative that the Mets were taking a step back. They did that from the minute Stearns took over. Oh, he's going to rip it down. He's going to go into a rebuild. Because typically that's what happens when a young Ivy League educated executive takes over. They rip the thing to the studs and rebuild it in their own image. Baltimore, Chicago, Houston. You have all the examples. Now, while you're doing it, it's ugly and it's very hard to draw fans a lot of times because of the cost of a team. Sometimes, you know, lowering your overhead and payroll makes you more profitable. I mean, I think that's the thing, and there's plenty of information out there that you could find. The team in and of itself is expensive. Just because a team is worth $3 or $4 billion doesn't mean you have $3 or $4 billion in cash to spend. That's a misnomer. But put that aside, the media, and Stearns never said this, and we talked about this a lot his first offseason into the season, he never said they weren't going to compete. He felt there was something there. He was adamant about not making foolish, short-term reactionary moves just to win incrementally more games that probabilistically wouldn't put them in a different spot to make the postseason, what I'd call them designer moves. Moves to show the fans and the media you're trying. Moves that typically lead to a bad contract. If Soto was available, and certainly a winner earlier, with the Mets coming off the season they did, with Sturgis coming in, it'd probably be really hard to sell him away from the Yankees. Maybe they could have still done that. They tried with Yamamoto. That was a different situation. And that was proof that they were trying to win. They never retreated on going for top talent. But Stearns made quality moves that for years and years and years, people used to, including those in the media, used to complain and moan about that the Mets go out and they'll sign, or they'll, you know, they have the Wright, the Reyes, they get the Santanas of the world, Delgado, whatever, Pedro. And then they have this great 8, 9, or 10 components of their roster, but 11 to 25 or 26, and then the minor league depth is for crap. And that's where they didn't spend, because either they weren't smart enough, they didn't think, you know, they didn't invest in different development aspects of the organization, they don't have smart enough executives that are looking at modern ways of evaluating ball players. These are things we talked about for years. And Stearns' one-off season comes in, does a lot of that, and the whole time they're trying to make that happen, the Mets are getting beat up by the national media, LOL Mets, because again, there's a big advantage in their eyes. They got Yankees, Yankee tradition, Yankee history, Yankee winning, and then it's much easier for them to have LOL Mets. Look at the Mets, they pay Bobby Bonilla every July 1st. Look at the Mets, they can, no matter how many times they're successful, look at how that football gets pulled away. They're cruel. They're like the bullies in high school that they hate, that they talk out about. They're the bullies in high school that like to pick on, you know, and this is a fan base that's easy to pick on. They pick on this fan base like the bullies pick on the weak guys, or the jocks pick on, you know, some of the smart kids in high school. I know that's probably a dated way of looking things in today's PC world, but that's the only way I can look at it. And then guys like me would come along and go back at these guys and dispel the narratives, which I'm still, the other day, I still have to dispel narratives from content creators on the Mets side to say, hey, Stearns never said this. The national media said this. And they're like, and I remember I got a comment going, whoa, you're saying the national media lied? Yeah. Yeah, I am. I'm saying they kind of spun a narrative. Lying in narratives is a thin line. If you have learned one thing, and this is a general media statement, not a sports media statement, but whether it's politics, world affairs, you know, anything, local politics or sports, they spin stories. Don't ever let it get the truth get in the way of a good story, is what I've heard some of these guys say. Because they got a business model, and the Mets are part of their business model. So that off the bat creates a pall over the fan base where they're like, hey, well, this team isn't trying, and it's very expensive to go to a ball game. I mean, let's start there. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. And there's no way somebody who's being told by the national media that the Mets are taking a step back to rebuild is going to do anything but say, hey, if I invest in going to a ball game, it's going to be something that's not related to the team on the field. Maybe it's a retirement number day. Maybe it's a promo giveaway. Maybe it's something where the kids could go out on a nice day, and then we could go out and do something because it's an early game after. It's going to be other reasons. You're not going to invest the time to be agitated and to be disappointed by a team that is being spun by the media as non-competitive. That was a lie. That was never the case. And then the Mets got off to a rough start, and they propelled that notion. And look, they were close to, and I was a proponent of it, of fulfilling that narrative by tearing the damn thing apart. They were close to that, I'll admit. But all along, Stearns felt he put together a team that it wouldn't have been necessary, and he turned out to be right. So you have that media component that's causing the attendance issue. The Mets, what, were 18th in attendance last year? A lot of that has to do with, I believe, and I don't have the breakdown. I know Cohen is citing that national series in September. I'll get to that, which agitated him. I felt on weekends and big series, I felt that the fans showed up. I thought the fans did an excellent job in the postseason. And I've had issues with the fans. Look, I have multiple times throughout the time I've done this, going back two decades, I've had issues calling out fans. Fans don't like to be called out. I've done it. I've gotten hate mail. I've had people unsubscribe to the show because of it. I've had people threaten never to listen to me again. I'm sure some of them came back. I think some didn't, because how dare you call out the fans? The fans are kind of like this third rail. I could do whatever I want, and I don't agree with that, but I got to tell you, what's fair is fair. The fans did a good job last year. Outside of that first series of the season where I was bitterly disappointed how negative they were, but that ties into the offseason, and that ties into exactly the problem that media dishonesty creates. The fans were great. Now, give Iglesias and OMG and some of the energy by that group credit, because the fans connected with that club and they started to win. And that's kind of the second point. And that's why it was so critically important this offseason to leverage the vibes. Because why the Mets are where they're at is that they have not, and this is largely Will Pound, they have not been able to take a foundational vibe, foundational success, and build a sustainable generation of fans. I say this, and we've had this conversation on this show before. This is not a new conversation. The reason we're talking about it again, because it was in the news. It's not something I would have talked about if not for the comments by Cohen. But when George Steinbrenner was owning the Yankees, and he was pariah. I always talk about driving home late at night when Benigno was overnight host. It was middle of the summer of 95. The Yankees were struggling. They would not go on their wild card run under Buck till a few weeks later. And this was after the strike, after they had one of the best records in baseball, the best behind Montreal. And then they lost out of a chance to maybe win a championship the year before. This is after years of frustration with, you know, the doldrums of the late 80s. And Joe Benigno said, the Yankees will never win with Steinbrenner as the owner. Now, that was wrong, because what G. Michael did behind the scenes, we all know, and then subsequently 1996, he saw that 96 team, the vibes of that 96 team, how it captured the city, and he leveraged it. He invested in it. He took it to the next level. He leveraged all the marketing dollars to create an inequitable financial advantage that he had within the rules of the game to build what turned out to be the 90s Yankees dynasty, which to this day, there is a generation of adults now in their 30s and 40s that were smitten and won by that team. And the Mets didn't do that. The Mets had the chance after 2000. They retreated the 24-1 with A-Rod. They had a chance in 06 with exciting players like Wright and Reyes. Yeah, the whole Los Mets, the race component, I remember that whole thing. That was BS. That was media garbage. It had nothing to do with the fans being upset with that club. That fan base was in love with that team. That was the summer love. It had nothing to do with race. That was nonsense. What happened was when they lost that game 7, when Beltran took that strike 3, in a season where every time that team needed to come through, they did. The fans were convinced, 20th anniversary of 86, that the magic was here. It brought back the disappointment that they have felt time and time again since the day Terry Pendleton's ball went over the wall. And that 06 team led to the 07 collapse, led to the 08 disappointment, led to Omar imploding, led to Madoff, led to baseball purgatory. And yes, you had that little pit stop to a World Series run in 15, but because the ownership group was leveraged up to the hilt, they had no ability to invest in that club and bring in talent to take that pennant and that young pitching, which they knew, anybody who was a baseball person knew, that's a clock. And if you're at 8 a.m., 9 a.m., 10 a.m. with young pitchers, it gets to noon real quick, and it gets to sundown pretty quick, and either you ride sundown and ride whatever's left, or you trade them, so you have a small window there, and the Mets didn't do that. And then there was all the off-the-field stuff, the Brody, the this, and it was a culmination where the media just latched on to the disappointment. And then Cohen's early tenure, it was easy to grab on to that narrative, that negative LOL Mets narrative. And that's a lot. That's the Mets. Because if the Mets win a World Series in 15 and make a nice little run, this probably dispels some of, there's no more yoke at that point. We're not talking about the yoke last year. You know, the whole weirdness of Jared Porter and Zach Scott and thumbs down and the drunk driving situation with Scott. I mean, just weird off the field stuff that was almost like Cohen's rite of passage as an owner to just like throw everything at him. So now the Mets go into last year, they have this run, and now, like, for the first time, not only do they do the right thing and they make it to the postseason, make it to a couple of wins of the World Series, they double down, they re-sign Pete, they bring in the biggest fish, top 10 hitter in the history of baseball in Soto. As of today, he's a top 10 hitter in the history of baseball away from the Yankees. And now they're starting to put this thing together with maybe some young players, maybe finding some undervalued assets. And, you know, maybe now they got something going. But like you heard Cohen said, it takes time. You know, fans aren't just going to say, oh, the Mets have arrived. They don't tell me, show me. There's probably a percentage of the fan base that's not so sure about this club. They're not sure about the pitching. They're not sure if there's enough offense. They're not sure about Diaz as the closer. There's a negative component of this fan base that probably still thinks they're one injury away. Maybe that's Montas from being, you know, the April-May Mets of last year. Maybe they think that Lindor's season was a fluke. There's all sorts of negative clouds that Mets fans put over their head. They manifest, Mets fans can manifest negative energy better than any fan base in any sport. And some of it's justified, I get it. Some of it is self-inflicted. A lot of self-inflicted. Sometimes you just got to let stuff go. And yes, I've been in that stadium, whether it's Shea Stadium or Citi Field, and when the energy stinks, when everybody's waiting for the roof to cave in, it's not magic. Energy is a thing, and teams feed off of energy. And you as a fan can negatively impact the home team. And sometimes they overcome it, because they do, but it makes it that much harder. And I saw that dissipate in the postseason and as the season went on. Even against the Dodgers. The Mets were getting their clock cleaned in games 3 and 4. And, you know, I didn't feel the negativeness. I think the fans understood that that was just a better team. And guess what? They showed up that Friday night for game 5. And the Mets rode that coattail and their energy to a win. And I know it didn't lead to a series win, but it showed me something. So, you know, you have that. So that is evolving. And Cohen is right. That should evolve with the attendance. Now, the third part of this is the way the world is changing. Look, I've said this before. I have a nephew. He is really not a baseball fan. He doesn't hate baseball. He loves basketball. He plays basketball. He'll probably play in high school. He likes video games. I don't think he's really a big NFL fan. I think he's more of a video game fan, playing video games of different sports. And baseball might not be his cup of tea, because as a basketball player, it's a lot of action and highlights. And it's funny, because I'm learning that even in the NBA, these kids, they like players, not teams. And that's the whole marketing of what the NBA has been doing since Jordan was around. And I was surprised when I asked him. I think I've told this story about a year or so ago when I was with him. And I'm like, hey, your friends don't like baseball? And he's like, that's not their first thing on their mind. Now, here's a guy, you know, his uncle, who plays Strat-O-Matic, still plays Strat-O-Matic, grew up baseball junkie. Yes, love the NBA. Love the NBA. I've talked about the 90s Knicks a ton on this show. Still watch the NBA. But baseball has always been my introduction to sports and my first love, and it'll always be. And partially why I'm doing this and not doing a Knicks show or another content creation. So you have that generation that I think they're trying to figure out how to grab. And I'm not sure, unless it's them falling in love with the sport for what it is, trying to conform the sport to those fans, I don't think that's possible. See, baseball always comes across to me as the sport that has the identity crisis, or the guy or the woman that goes out on a date and is trying to be who the other person wants them to be instead of just being themselves. Be yourself, and it's not good enough, that's not your customer. And if enough of those people are not your customer, then you have a bigger problem. You can't tell me, as I sit here and I look at baseball attendance as a whole, you can't tell me that baseball's not popular, because I have attendance here. You know, you have teams like the Dodgers drawing close to 4 million fans, the Yankees over 3 million, the Phillies over 3 million, the Padres over 3 million, Atlanta, 3 million. Outside of Oakland and Miami, which you know what's going on there, and maybe even Tampa, which is a whole different thing, and the White Sox losing a record game, I mean, even they're drawing 1 million fans. So baseball is still popular. But I think baseball is being consumed in a different way. And I go back to lifestyle. You're asking a lot. And, you know, look, I get it. Cohen's disappointed. You want that ballpark filled. You want that ballpark filled with fans who are going to bring energy and help the team and be that 10th man on the field. But it's a Tuesday night in September. You may have kids who have school the next day. You may have woke up at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, commuted to a job. A lot of people left the city to live in the suburbs post-COVID. I think that if I had to take a guess, a big contingent of Mets fans are suburbanites. I'm not sure they're living in... I mean, I'm sure there's Mets fans in Queens and Jackson Heights and Corona and Bayside. I know they're there, but I think you have a big contingent of the fan base that's on Long Island, that's in Jersey, that's in Westchester, maybe North. Who knows? And asking them to get to the ballpark during the week is a lot. And even if you live in Bayside and you go to work and you get home in time and then you grab your kids and you get over to the stadium and there's the parking fee, which I've talked about, and then there's the tickets that you may or may not be able to get a deal. And then you get there and it's, you know, 7:10 start. And even in the 2.5 hour games of today, they've made the advancements where the games don't drag for 3.5 hours. You're probably leaving 9:45, 10:10. You get home 10:30, 11 o'clock. You put your kids to bed and you go to sleep and you're back at the work grind. And now all your chores, any other responsibilities, all of it gets put on hold for that game. Your day, and if it's a Saturday or a Sunday, if there are other things you have to accomplish, chores around the house, cleaning the house, cleaning the yard, you know, kids have birthdays and responsibilities and travel squads and the daughter's got cheerleading or, you know, she's got gymnastics or she plays a sport maybe she plays baseball or basketball, whatever it is. Like, these are all responsibilities. It's hard to get to the ballpark. It's like a pilgrimage. Game starts at 4 o'clock. Your whole Saturday is getting stuff done in the morning, getting up early, getting over. I mean, you're going to have to, if you're coming from the suburb, you're coming from where I am on Eastern Long Island, you're going to have to give yourself 90 minutes to get there because there's going to be traffic. I'm exit, you know, give or take, I'm exit probably, depending on where you go, I'm between exit, you know, 58 and 60 on the LI-80. So I'm out there a little bit. But, you know, it's not that far, but it's far. And in a world where I could wake up on a Sunday, get my chores done, relax at home with streaming in my yard with my dogs, watch a ball game that starts on a Sunday at 1 o'clock, ends about 4, and then immediately turn my iPad off, fire up the barbecue and spend time with my wife and my family. And there are other things I enjoy than baseball. I try to be a well-rounded person, especially as I get older in life. Not because it's an indictment of the sport, but because it's what I think you should do to actually increase the enjoyment of your passions when you don't oversaturate yourself with them because it burns you out. You know, I think that plays into it. Like, the barrier of entry to watch a game is so much more convenient. Putting cost aside, which is a big thing. Look, I talked to somebody last year that had season tickets. It's a big commitment. You're talking about, you know, 15, 20 G's sometimes for decent seats. And then there's the other component of, do I want to sit in the 500 section up there just to be in the ballpark? Like, do I really want that? I mean, yeah, if you go and you hang out with the 7 line and you walk around and you... I know that there's a component of that. And there are going to be fans that are going to do that. And there's plenty of them. You saw them in the postseason. But during the postseason, especially because I'm doing this, I'm doing the postgame shows. Like, to me, going to the ballpark is difficult during the postseason because of what I do here. But take that away. I mean, the experience from home is pretty good. You get to hear the commentary. I mean, maybe we're fortunate because of Gary, Keith, and Ron. I learn or I enjoy the game personally for me so much more watching from home. Now, I love going a couple of times a year. I bring my wife. We go. We save up enough where we'll do the Hyundai section. The Hyundai, because she likes the Hyundai seats. They're just good. And we've been fortunate on the secondary market to get some decent prices. That's probably going to get harder because as the years go on, they get more expensive. It's a, you know, Hyundai seats, couple of tickets, parking, food, which is included there. You're talking about a $400-$500 night out. I mean, yeah, you go to dinner on Long Island to a nice restaurant, it's going to cost you $250 for two people, maybe $300 with a tip. I get it. You know, you've got energy bills, you've got supermarket bills, you've got car payments, you've got, you know, all sorts of stuff that comes up. Like, there's a lot coming at the public, and all the things you hear about inflation and how it hurts the middle class. I mean, those are those Mets fans that are there, the working people. And it's hard. It doesn't mean that, and I don't think Cohen could do much about it. And I don't think Cohen was calling out. I think it comes down to how much of your hard-earned disposable income are you willing to invest to go to a game within a season, knowing the outcome is whatever. We haven't even gotten into the weather component because the weather plays into it. Because if you're there with the weather, completely uncomfortable being there. Not to mention, you know, as you get to be late 40s like me, you got to make more bathroom breaks, right? Not that the bathroom is bad, but, you know, I remember I went to a game last year, and I think I missed a big hit by DJ Stewart because I couldn't get back from the bathroom in time for the start of the inning. The bathroom wasn't that far away. Now I'm at home, I walk over, you know, you get it. So I think there's a confluence of things here. Now, should the Mets be 18th in attendance or 17th in attendance behind Colorado and Seattle and Anaheim and Texas? Shoot, Toronto. I think that there's another, on average, 10,000 fans a game that could bring them into the top 10. But it's been a long time. I mean, I go back to 2019. The Mets were 13th. And the Mets haven't really been, even their World Series year. They go to the World Series in 2015. They're 12th. The year after the World Series, they were 9th. I mean, they've incrementally been better. I mean, it hasn't been. The first year of Citi Field, they were 7th in attendance. That's Citi Field's inaugural season. The last year at Shea, they were 2nd. I got to tell you, since Shea went out, and I don't think that is a coincidence, I think, and a lot of that has tied into the collapses and the disappointment of 08 and then the rebuild and the awfulness of the end of Omar, the beginning of Alderson. It's been a long time. Now, maybe the Mets fans after last year are starting to believe. I also think what Cohen's trying to do with the real estate around the park is big. I mean, there's nothing to do there. Like, all you're going to Citi Field to do is watch a Mets game. And yes, that is your Mets fans, right? But if you really want to entice people to spend the day and not watch the game at home, having other things around there, the open air space, I know the casino's a controversial thing, or whatever they plan on doing there, that's going to help. Because then you could say, you know, it's cool. You know, my wife likes, it's not a hardcore Mets fan. She'll watch the game and wants to see them win because of me. But she's not watching the Mets without me. She likes to go to the game for the experience and some of the, you know, fun stuff. And I'm sure if there was something to do around the park after, it would make her want to go more than just a couple of times a year. I mean, this all comes into play. So I think, and I'll leave you with this, I think Cohen is right to be disappointed. I think Cohen is, from a team perspective, is putting time and money into the product to turn that around. Hopefully that eliminates the media narrative garbage, the lying of the narrative. And hopefully the team, because now you have the good season, they leveraged it with their work in the offseason. Now it's about doing it on the field, because if you have the team and then you disappoint, like, not that they'll be the worst team money could buy, but you never know, like, anything could happen. You set yourself back. So if the players don't perform, this is all for naught. Good process is putting you in a position to have a good outcome. But you need to see it. So that will help, and that will help build it. And then whether or not he's able to close the deal with the municipalities and the politicians and some of the unions and all the other stuff that makes it very, very, very difficult to build what he wants to build around that ballpark, there's a lot of variables there. That's a conversation for another day. But I think owning a baseball team is not as lucrative as you think in terms of year-to-year profitability. I think it's a windfall when you sell the club, especially if you bought it in the 70s and 80s. You make a lot of money. It's like buying a house for nothing, and you make your money on your house when you sell it. I mean, it's the same thing. And then, of course, if you build around there and you get involved in the real estate portion, you become very, very wealthy. So I'm not crying for these guys, but don't sit around. They don't pull in. And I know this is a debate. I know what Boris is saying about investing in revenues. At some point, these guys don't want to dip into their personal savings like Cohen has to field a roster. I don't blame them. Their families don't want to give up their wealth. They don't want to give up stuff that are that is earmarked for other businesses. I get it. There's a middle ground in everything. You guys know me. I'm not necessarily pro-owner, but I'm not 100% pro-player. There's a lot of challenges on both sides of the business. Do I think there's cheap owners and owners pocketing revenue sharing and not doing anything with it? Yes. Do I think there's as much revenue as people think? Now, not seeing the books? No, I don't. I don't think owning a baseball team. And Cohen has basically said, look, if he really wanted to make money at the level he's used to, he would not have put this money in this club. Here's the other thing. Cohen is in the honeymoon phase. He's starting to feel it. He got addicted to winning. He got addicted to feeling the adrenaline of the postseason, having the champagne celebrations, the post-game interviews. Now is the time where you have his most attention, where he's going to be more than likely to overpay for things or to throw caution to the wind financially. 5 years down the road, when you've been doing this and you're taking losses or not making as much money and you get older, you may see him, you know, and people criticize Hal Steinbrenner, but he's been doing this a long time. His father did it before him. At some point, you say to yourself, I spend X and I get Y. If I spend Z, I could probably still get somewhere between X and Y, and I'm not really, from a standpoint of on the field, any worse off. Now, from a marketing standpoint, it's a hit, but he's starting to say, you know, do I really need to spend to market the offseason, to win the offseason, to win the hearts and minds of the fans if I could make it to the World Series? And if I make it to the World Series, or I win a pennant, or I win a division and I go deep in the playoffs, they're going to show up. Because ultimately, it's about wins and losses. Because all the marketing of the offseason, of winning the offseason, does is get people jacked for the season. You don't perform, you don't win, it doesn't matter. So that's how I feel about the attendance conversation. I think it's extremely nuanced. I think there's a lot of factors. I think winning will solve it. But even with winning, the way that the consumption of the sport is now is trending more convenient, more affordable to not going to the ballpark, and better time management in your life, a busy life right now, than it is going to the ballpark. And that might be also the way our world is now. It's a go, go, go world. People are working longer. They have less free time. The world is not Mayberry where it closes up. The world is 24/7, 365. You know, weekends are not weekends anymore. For good or better, good or worse, better or worse, whatever. Botched that one there. So anyway, hope everybody enjoyed this first full. We did our Pitchers and Catchers show, Grapefruit Roundup. Spent a lot of time here on the Cohen attendance conversation. That was a big part of the conversation this week. I'm really excited about Clay Holmes. I think that the Mets rotation, there's some interesting depth options. I think one of the things, like I said, as you evaluate these pitchers, particularly the pitchers this spring, look at the numbers behind the numbers. Don't just look at the traditional stats. Don't just look at, you know, the you know what happened in that game. They're just working on stuff. And I think, you know, using things like Stuff Plus and TJ Stats and the things that I talk about, critically important as we evaluate, as we evolve here on this program with how we evaluate and discuss the sport, the team. As you always know, I'm a back-of-the-paper-bag math guy. I try to bring these worlds together. I am not an advanced analytics guy. I don't want to come on here and talk like a front office Ivy League graduate, because that's not who I am. And some of this stuff is way over my head. But that doesn't mean that we can't have a great conversation. We can enjoy the sport and consume the sport. And in the end, the purpose of this show is for you to get away from reality for an hour and to have some fun. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, substack.com/@talkingmetsnoG. And I want to thank the good folks on Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back with another Grapefruit Roundup next week. Till then, take care, everybody.